Thank you for the warm welcome. Grab a seat. I came by today because after all the... You had a great time, first of all. You know, it's one thing to master skills, it's another thing to enjoy your life. And when I first got involved with transformational work, and my entire vision was, how the heck people make people have the ability to change themselves, but to make it fun? Because, you know, there's so many heavy experiences in those days. I remember Est was out and was very successful in those days. And I eventually got a chance to meet Warner Earhart very, very early in my career. And I sat across from him and I said, Warner, I said, you know, because I'd attacked him viciously before I was anybody, when I was nobody, because I just hated the process of thinking you had to tear somebody down and that you had the right to tell them what was right or wrong or what to believe. Just to me, it seemed too absurd. The idea that there is an integrity that everybody needs to follow, which is your values, to me is absurd because diversity is the secret to life. And there are certain laws of life you can't violate, and that I agree. There are certain things, you know, you try and say, I don't believe in gravity, I don't value gravity, well, you'll pay a price. But belief structures change at different stages of your life. And it's important for people to be able to find that path themselves. But also, so I sat across from him one day, and my career was just starting, and he was very, very successful. And I said, you know, I've been attacking you for years. And I said, because I just think, you know, the way that you went about things was installing your beliefs in everybody else's, rather than saying, here's my beliefs, and take what you like, throw out the rest. I said, but the biggest thing, Warner, I said, you know, I don't want to judge you. You've reached more people than I have. At that point, that was true. It's certainly not anymore. And I said, but we both have shown we can help lots of people. We can help them help themselves. I said, as long as we can both help people, why not make it fun? And I remember he sat across from me. He was so honest. It was really a beautiful moment. He looked at me and he said, I guess I never thought of that. Is this not a value to make it enjoyable? And the reason I bring it up is because in my own life, you know, when I turned 40, I had, you know, a little mini crisis in my head about where is my life and where I'm going to go. And all the stupid stuff that I knew intellectually made no sense, but emotionally I still had. And I was thinking, this is dumb, but it was still going on. You ever been in that place?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it lasted about a month for me, in and out. About 2 or 3 days that were happening, in about a month. And in that process, though, what was beautiful about it is it made me kind of update my model of the world. So now I'm on version 4.0. And it was a critical set of improvements in my model of the world, frankly, because, you know, if you had to ask me what was my life about, that was easy. You know, transforming the quality of life and helping people experience extraordinary quality of life, that's what my whole life has always been about. But most of the energy of my life was focused outside, not inside. Not that I didn't take care of myself or work on myself, that I did intensely, but for the reasons so that I could serve more. And the experience that I really learned was to put a little more time into me, not so I could give more to other people, but so that I frankly could enjoy more. I had the experience at one stage in my 40th year, right before that actually, my 39th year, where for the first time in my life, I was standing on stage, and I always loved what I do at such an unbelievable level, and I had 15,000 people in my audience, and they were having the greatest time of their life, and I was unhappy. And that was a really scary moment. It's like reading one of those VH1 behind-the-scenes things, you know, the person gets everything they want, and then they're unhappy. You know, it's like, what in the hell, you know? And you know, part of it was because I had not been totally honest with myself about who I am in my nature. And out of wanting to please everybody, especially my wife, frankly, who's a really great lady, to try to please her, I tried to be things I wasn't. In other words, in order to get acceptance and love, I try to alter it, play it down, be a little bit smaller. Now, on stage, that was rarely true. You know, early on in my career, you know, I had to deal with those things, and I finally said, this is who I am. If you don't like it, it's okay with me. I'm not here for everybody. You know, but this is who I am. Some of it you may like, some you don't. I'm asking you to be me. Take the parts you like. Throw out the parts you don't. I don't pretend I have all the answers. And so on stage, that was true. Off stage, that was true. But other parts of my life, I was muting. How many of you do that, by the way? I'm curious. And, you know, I kind of knew that a little bit, but it didn't seem like that big a deal. But when you mute even just a little bit, day after day, year after year, decade after decade, there's a part of you that dies inside and you don't even know, and it happens so slow. It was, you know, one of those things. You'd know it. But it's that old burnout metaphor. You stick the frog in the water and you turn the heat on real slow. It boils it up. Turn it up full blast and it's boiling. It jumps out immediately. And gradually over time, that happened for me. So there's been a book I've been working on for, God, 4 or 5 years. And, you know, writing is not my favorite process because it's solitary, it's quiet, and you sit still. So now I can do anything moving but sitting still for hours. Plus, you know, when I speak, I don't really care. I'm looking at you. I know my outcomes. I see where it is, and I always get the outcome. In writing, I know it's going to live forever. It's going to be read this way. So I create a whole different set of rules for what makes it okay. But along the way to writing the book I was supposed to write, and now I'm writing the book I really was meant to write. And it's interesting. It wasn't meant to be written until now, because the change in my life was that I realized my original book was called The Driving Force. Because my philosophy of life was basically one of, you know, breaking through. Most of my life has been about really the science of achievement. You know, how do you help somebody figure out whatever it is, boom, make it happen, get through it, and I can fire it off in 2 seconds and make it happen. You've got the strategy, the skill, the ability, the talent, whatever it is. Absorb everything that could possibly work. Take it all in, synthesize it, bam, snap it back out in a way you can produce the result. And I've done that for a quarter of a century. It's hard for me to imagine, my 25th year. So as I looked at that, you know, I got better and more powerful and more skilled at that. And, you know, anything I could think of, you know, the old phrase of you can believe it and, you know, conceive it, you can achieve it, pretty much have proven that to myself. Whether it be in my capacity to help someone make a change who seemed unchangeable, or whether it be in the creation of goals or money or anything like that. But what I learned is there's a difference between something that's obtainable and something that's sustainable. And so my reason for coming by today is to trigger you and have you leave today with some more questions and less answers. We've given you a lot of answers. I want to leave you with some more questions. And that's not always comfortable, but it's always progressive. Because it allows you, I shouldn't say it's always progressive. It's progressive if the questions are progressive. What's wrong with me is not going to probably lead you to a greater level of what you want in your life. But the kinds of questions that I'm interested in having you look at is what really is driving you right now. What are you doing it for? What do you want to be doing it for? And more importantly, who are you in your core? Those are really the core elements. Anyway, the bottom line is, as time has gone by, I'm going to write this book, and I'm writing the driving force. And frankly, for the first time in my life, I felt no driving force to write this driving force book. And I found myself, I was in Fiji, and I got an army of people. I figured, okay, I won't do this alone. I'll get a bunch of people, I'll transcribe, I'll talk, you know, I'll do it that way. Then I'll fix what I speak. That's a lot easier. Actually how I wrote my other books, by the way. I didn't sit. I got up finally and paced back and forth, and they typed what I said, and I fixed it all up. And so I figured that would go back to that strategy again. But even that, I just was like, damn, you know, I'm too happy. I felt like I'm too damn happy. I don't really feel like this. I don't have a drive to go do this thing. I'm here in Fiji. It's beautiful as hell. Why the hell would I sit and do this? And I'm like, damn, I'm not driven. Tony Robbins, I'm the driving force, you know, that's me, you know, I don't feel like it, it's like, I don't have the drive to do this, and I thought, God, what's the matter with you, why don't you have this drive to go do it, and then I started freaking going, this happiness is really not working too well, you know, and I'm trying to figure out why, and I'm sitting there, and I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life, and I thought, that's kind of weird, because actually, during that time period, and even right now, honestly, I've had a period of situations and businesses and things like that. I had a coup in Fiji. It cost me about $1 million, but more importantly, it upset me emotionally because the impact it had on a country I really love. You know, I had a dot-com company where I made $400 million in a day and then saw $400 million about disappear in about a day, you know. But more importantly, my reputation and identity were there. Well, I didn't want to let the company go like everybody else did. So I fought to deal with that. And I went through a divorce, which was incredibly hard. It's the hardest choice of my life. As my wife is a phenomenal lady, there's nothing wrong with her, but it was a choice that I made that I've been struggling with for 5 years. It's because I want to make everybody happy, but I wasn't. And I worked on me. It's not like I showed up one day, tried the relationship out, and left. I mean, I was a 24-year-old kid. And all of a sudden, I had a 17-year-old son and an 11-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old son and a wife who had been through 2 marriages and had a lot of experiences before me that were quite different than me that I needed to deal with. And then a baby on the way shortly after that. So it's not like I just showed up or I didn't take it serious and I raised all those kids as my own, and they are my kids. But after 10 years of it, I knew that it wasn't right. They were different. We were different people, even though we shared some of the same values, very different people. So how do you do that? And how do you deal with that? Like, if your kids are going to change, I went through all the relationship and what it means and who this person is in your life. Somebody who was once a teacher may now become a student. You know, somebody wants us to remember, happiness and problems have no relationship.